Hello, my true crime lovers, and welcome back to Crime-a-Rita, hosted by yours truly, Ivis. So today, I'm actually sipping on a sour apple margarita. It's really not that good. It's sour, it's strong, but doesn't taste good at all. It tastes like I don't even know how to explain it. It's just nasty. So I'm gonna give it a 3. I mean, hey, if you like sour apples, be my guest, go for it. But Ivis doesn't like it. I just wanted to give it a try, and I chose this one because this margarita, because this story that I'm about to tell you is definitely going to leave a sour taste in your mouth, especially for all the people who live close by. So yeah, let's go ahead, grab your margarita, and let's dive into some Crime-a-Rita. So, Gary Michael Hignick, or Hignick, I'm not sure which way to say it, but we're gonna go ahead and say Hignick, but I'm just gonna go ahead and just call him Gary, but I just wanted you guys to know his full name. So, he was born November 22nd, 1943. So, he was an American murderer who kidnapped, tortured, and raped 6 women, killing 2 of them, while holding them prisoners in a pit in his basement in Philadelphia, PA, which is part of the same thing, but whatever. So, fun fact, Hynek was actually the last person that was executed in Philadelphia. That was in 1999. I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys a little bit about his early life before, you know, he became the crazy ass person that he is. So Gary was, I already said that Gary was born on November 22nd. So he had a younger brother named Terry. Now his parents, who was Ellen and Michael Hignick, were divorced in 1946. And Gary and his brother had to move and be with their moms for about 4 years. Then after being with his mom for 4 years, then they went back to his dad's house with his new wife. Now, Hignick would later claim that he was often emotionally abused by his father. He suffered a lifelong problem of bedwetting. Now, supposedly, I don't know, like, I heard a lot of people say, well, from what I've read, I heard a lot of, like, killers and, like, serial killers and psychopaths and people like that used to wet the bed when they were younger. So he was actually one of those crazy people who was a bedwetter. And he actually claimed that his father would humiliate him by forcing him to hang his stained sheets from his bedroom window in full view of their neighbors. After his son's arrest, his dad actually denied ever abusing his son. Now, when Gary went to school, he was actually one of those kids that that kind of stood to himself. He never really gave anyone eye contact. And when any of, like, the girls would, like, try to talk to him or be like, hey, did you finish doing your homework or did you do your homework? He would, like, lash out at them and be like, for example, someone actually said that he yelled at them and was like, that they're not worthy enough to talk to him. So he was also teased about the shape of his head. It was, like, oddly shaped. But I don't know, like, when I look at the picture, I guess I could see, like, where the weird shape of the head came from. But so supposedly what he said was that he actually fell out of a tree when he was younger. And he was never the same after that. Now, the crazy part is that when he tested for his IQ, he actually scored 148, which is actually really damn good. I don't want to tell you guys what mine is, but it's definitely not up there. But So I'm going to go ahead. So he got married, right? He was married, but it doesn't say when exactly he got married. But what we're going to go ahead and do, I'm just going to go ahead and start off of like the years of like when everything started. So in 1976, his first legal charge was he was actually charged with aggravated assault and carrying an unlicensed pistol after shooting the tenant of a house he offered for rent, grazing the guy's face. So he didn't kill him. He just like kind of grazed him. So in 1978, that's when he actually had his first imprisonment. Now, what he did was that he actually signed out his sister-in-law, which was his girlfriend's sister at the time, from a mental institution. Now, on the day that he kidnapped her, well, not kidnapped her, the day he actually took her out of the hospital, she was actually found and returned to the hospital after it was revealed that he had been raping her, and she ended up contracting gonorrhea from him. Now he was obviously arrested and charged with kidnapping, rape, unlawful restraint, false imprisonment, and the list goes on. So now the original sentence was overturned on appeal, and Gary spent 3 years of his incarceration in a mental institution prior to being released in April of 1983 under the supervision of the state. Now, we all know how this system actually really works. I don't know who said that, but now in 1986, he actually, so after his wife Betty left him in 1986, Gary was arrested yet again and charged with assault for spousal rape. So his wife said that she was basically raped by him, forced to have rape and things like that. What a sick bastard. Who does that to their wife? Who does that in general? But who are we to judge, you know? Now, between 1986 and 1987, this is where the serial rape and murders happened. So on November 25th, 1986, Gary abducted a woman by the name of Josephine Rivera. By January 1987, he had kidnapped another four women whom he actually held captive in a pit in the basement of his house in North Philadelphia. The captives, who were all black women, were raped, beaten, and tortured. Now, his house was actually really, really, really dirty. Obviously, the outside was really dirty. If you follow me on Instagram, I had posted some of the pictures that I was able to get. So he basically digged a hole under his in his basement. Like, digged a hole underneath, like, the ground and, like, made, like, a little bed. There was, like, a little spot where you can actually, you know, use the bathroom. But it was really, really small. But enough to hold, you know, people there. So, one of the women, Sandra, died of complications of starvation, torture, and a untreated fever. So, Gary, being the sick bastard that he is, dismembered her body, put her, he had problems. Okay, so he took her arms and legs, he froze them, and then marked the bags or the boxes that he had holding the, like the arms and the legs. He named it dog food. And he cooked her ribs in the oven and boiled her head in a pot of stove. So I can't even imagine the smell of that damn house. Probably smells like pure shit and pure death. So when the police came into the house due to complaints of bad odor, but left because Gary explained to them he was roasting and cooking. He was basically cooking a meat and ended up falling asleep. This is what he's telling the cops, that he fell asleep while he was cooking a meat and the meat burned. I mean, I don't know what type of meat smells like pure death where your neighbors are complaining about it, because I've never heard of anything crazy like that. So, hey, whatever. Now, several sources state that he grounded up the flesh of Lindsay and mixed it with dog food and fed that to his other victims. So I actually heard this a lot, and I heard it when I was looking at the victims' interviews and things like that. They all actually said the same thing. So I don't know, like, I'm gonna go and believe it. So this, you know, from what I've read, that's what it said, that that's what people are stated. But I don't think that the victims are just gonna sit here and make up lies about shit he did. So he grinded up the flesh and mixed it with dog food and then fed it to his victims. His defense attorney, Chuck, said that upon examination of the tools in his kitchen, they found no evidence of this. Who knows? So when it came to the other victim who passed away, Gary used an electric shock as a form of torture. At one point, he forced three of his captives who were bound in chains into a pit. Gary ordered Rivera, which is the first victim that he actually ever got, the first person that he kidnapped, and another woman to fill the hole that he digged up with water and then forced Rivera to help him apply electric current from a strip extension cord to the woman's chain. This is crazy. So Deborah was actually electrocuted, and he actually disposed of her body in the Pines in New Jersey. So he traveled with her body from Philadelphia to New Jersey and got rid of her body. So on January 18, 1987, Gary abducted Jacqueline, the youngest of the six victims. Askins was 18 years old at the time of her abduction. And during a TV interview for the May 5th, 2018 special report of Gary Hicknick, House of Horror, I don't know where I got the other one from, 30 years later. So Askins stated that Gary wrapped duct tape around the mouth of the victims and stabbed them in the ear with screwdrivers. So whenever, you know, someone would come visit him or whenever there would be people around, so they can't hear when someone's at the house. So he basically did that to all his victims, and they all said the same thing when they did interviews. So in March 23rd, 1987, Gary and Rivera abducted Agnes Adams. The next day, Rivera convinced Gary to let her go temporarily in order to visit her family. So I'm guessing they had from the interview, which I'm going to play, it sounded like they were actually really close for some reason. And some people say that she was an accomplice. Some people say she's a victim. I'm not going to say neither because I'm going to go with the victim part, but I could see why people would say that she was somehow involved. But she did say that they were actually really close because she was there. She was like the first person that he kidnapped. So in order to visit her family, he drove her to the gas station and said he would wait for her there. She walked a block away and called 911. The responding officers, went, and then they actually went to the house and found the other victims. So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I don't really think that she was an accomplice. I just feel like when you're in a situation like that, you have nothing else but to get, you know, try to, I'm trying to think how you could say this. Try to, like, get yourself not involved, but, like, kind of befriending the person, because the more you can, like, befriend this person, the more they can allow you to do certain things in certain situations. So in this case, she had some way, for some reason, he trusted her enough to let her go see his family. But instead, she went and called 911. So that's why I feel like there's no way she could be an accomplice. Like, so I don't know. People just, you know, the internet loves to talk. So they obviously found the body. They actually found the remains in the refrigerator, in the freezer. They found the ribs cooking in the oven. They found the head. They found, they found the victims downstairs in the basement tied with chains. Now, it's crazy because some people say that he actually had like this church thing, like a mini church in his house. So he would have like a couple people into his house. So I'm guessing that's when he would, you know, put the screwdrivers in the victim's ears to avoid them from hearing anyone upstairs. So he actually was, of course, convicted and sent to death. And so he actually got convicted in, I'll tell you right now. So he got convicted in 1988 and then was killed in 1999, which was, again, the last person who was executed in Philadelphia. There was also people saying that he was like a sick individual, like he was actually mentally ill. And I get it. So this is why I said that he doesn't remind me of Ted Bundy at all. So I don't know why the internet was even saying that he was like Philadelphia's Ted Bundy, because Ted Bundy never even had a thought of keeping his victims alive. He was strictly, you know, torture and like, well, kill, torture, whatever he used to do. All the crazy stuff he used to do with his victims, he would dress them, he would clean them, certain things. Like, it's just different stories, you know, different things that Ted Bundy used to do. You know, this guy, I don't really think that Gary wanted to kill any of them, because most of the reports said that his interview was that, you know, what the police said, that he said that he wasn't really trying to hurt them. He was basically just trying to create a family with, you know, black women having a lot of different kids and then moving to a farm and you know, just having, like, he had this whole thing planned out. So what I really feel like he liked to see them suffer, tortured, but he still wanted to, like, keep them around for some reason. He just wanted to keep them alive. So, because if he was like Ted Bundy, they would all be dead at this point, not just the two. You know, the one just died because she was tortured so much and she was, you know, she was starved and she had a crazy fever. And then the other one, he wasn't even, like, I'm going to play a little clip, but Jasmine even said, like, you know, when the girl was in the pit in the water and electrocuted, she was just, like, floating and he was, like, face down and he was, like, she's telling him, like, yo, Gary, I think she died because I don't hear screaming anymore. And he's like, no, I don't think so. So when he checked, she was obviously deceased. And he was like, oh yeah, you're right, she is dead. So then, you know, he took her and buried her. So I don't really think his intentions were to kill anyone. I just feel like his intentions were just to torture, keep them around, have kids with them, and just, you know, live that secret life. And it didn't go as planned. So he got caught and he's dead. So I just wanted to share that story because it's close to home. And if you look at the house, you wouldn't even think about anything happening in that house, in the basement. And this whole time, there's like a crazy story behind it. So whenever you go to Philly and you drive by, the house, and I actually put the address in, on my Instagram and Facebook, so you could still see the pictures there. So it's really scary. Now, really quick, I just want to go ahead and just give you guys a little clip of Jasmine's interview. So I kind of skipped it a little bit, so I'm just going to play a little bit of what she said just so you guys can hear her. And sometimes, like, the interview kind of skips, so bear with me here.
So he was running out of room in the home to fit everybody. So since I was there first, it gave me seniority over everybody else, that he would leave me in the basement and put everybody else in the hole and at least to be in charge of everybody down in the hole or whatever. It caused Sandra to go on punishment for all these days, you know, and he had her handcuffed, like, to the ceiling beams, like, for a couple of days, and she wouldn't eat and stuff, and he didn't, and he was trying to make her eat, and he was, like, she was putting bread in her mouth, because when you got on punishment, first he would just give you water, then he would give you bread and water, and then you, like, I don't know, I guess, like, he would take away all your privileges, and then you'd have to start all over again, you know? Her whole body just fell, and she was just, like, the only thing that was holding her up was just the handcuff, you know? And I kept saying, Lisa, go over there and tap Sandra and see what's, and tell her, you know, see what's wrong with her, because her whole body was collapsed. And she kept tapping her, and Sandra didn't move, you know? So he just puts the key in the handcuff, and her whole body falls, and her back of her head hits the concrete on the, well, like the hole, the surrounding of the hole, is the back of her head, like, hits the corner of this hole. And he's like, she's dead. You know, she's dead. And that, like, really had me so messed up, because Sandra had been there with me from the beginning, you know? He, like, unticks her chain off and stuff, and, you know, he takes her upstairs. He got Sandra's head cooking in the pot upstairs, right? And he got her ribs and stuff and a little roasting pan in the oven, you know, and her arms and stuff is in the freezer. And he says that if I don't cut out my bullshit, that this is going to be me. They were watching an Apple dog food commercial or some kind of food dog food commercial. And they were, like, saying, damn, that dog food looks good. It looks good enough to eat. So Donna says, Gary, Deborah says that she would eat dog food and stuff if you would give it to her, but that's not what she said. So Gary goes upstairs, and he gets the dog food, and he brings it downstairs, and he makes these three eat them, the ones that was on punishment. He was taking Sandra's body and grinding it in a food processor and mixing it with this dog food that he was feeding these three other girls. He used to fill the hole up with water and take electrical wire. Well, like a plug that you plug in, he would strip the two wires, and then he would take the wire while they're in the water and put it on their chains. In the beginning, Deborah was hollering, and then she didn't holler anymore. He thought something was wrong with the wire. I said, look down there in that hole and see what's wrong with that girl. I said, because she keeps saying Deborah dead, that she laying face down in the water. So he finally lifts up the board, and he says, yeah, she is laying face down in the water. And he's like, picks her up, like, by her hair, back of her head and something. He's like, yeah, he's right, she's dead. And now he's like, now all my troubles are over with. Now I can get back to having a peaceful basement. I, Josephina Rivera, and Gary Hynek electrocuted Deborah Dudley at 3520 North Marshall Street on whatever day it was. I can't remember. It might have been, she was freed on the 25th. Might have been like the 21st of March, 1987, by applying electricity to her chains while sitting in a pool of water. Anytime that you're cut off from the world outside, and whoever's holding you captive, the same person after a period of time.
And now if you guys want to listen to the whole thing, just go ahead and just, like, Google Gary Hynek's survivors, tell her story, and it will basically just come up with Jasmine's story. I think Oprah did one with the other victim, but for some reason I can't find the full interview. But I did hear her talk about how it still affects her till this day. You know, and she, and you know what's crazy? She actually lives a couple blocks from where actually everything happens, right? To this, like, right now, in this day, like today, were her sons. And, you know, and I, and it's sad because, you know, these people, these women just went through so much. And now that they're out, you know, living, yeah, it's been years, but it still affects people. Like, if, you know, if you look at each of the victims, you can just tell, like, by their face, everything, like, it still haunts them. So Gary is right where he belongs, in the pits of hell. So, so long, Gary. And yeah, so that's pretty much it today. And so I'm in between two stories. Like, I don't know which one I want to talk about. The one that happened in Camden, which is a mass, shooting. The other one is kind of like a recent one. So I don't know, like, I'm still in the middle, so I'm not going to confirm it yet until maybe on Instagram. So I'll keep you guys updated for sure. And, I'm like dehydrated, but yeah. And what else was I going to tell you guys? Oh, so really quick, I want to tell you guys about this show called Prodigal Son. For my true crime lovers, if you're really a true crime lover, you already know about this show. But I really wanted to bring it up to you guys so you guys can give it a watch, give it an eye, because it's actually really good. I'm gonna just tell you guys a little bit about it. I'm not gonna ruin the whole thing because I have a tendency to do that when I get super excited. But the Prodigal Son is just like basically that was a serial killer, and the son is a profiler for the FBI, and then he has like traits of a serial killer, so he knows how to like read them out, and it's crazy. So yeah, give it a shot. It's not on Netflix, it's on Xfinity, or if you have cable, Comcast or anything like that, just type in Prodigal Son. I think the last episode is next. Hopefully, I'm hoping it's Monday. I'm hoping that they didn't just end it the way it did. But yeah, give it a try. Let me know what you guys think. And let me know what you guys want me to talk about. If there's any other stories. I did hear about the Evelyn Blas. I think Evelyn. Evelyn Blossom, RIP, she was a couple months, her mom's a bitch, her mom's locked up, her mom's 18, so I hope that the judge literally just rips her in half, and she's done. Like, I can't even comprehend. Like, I was looking at her, the mom's interview, right, before they actually found, like, the human remains, and this girl was like, you could just tell, like, she's just fake crying, fake sobbing. And I'm like, yo, first of all, you're wearing a turtleneck. It's like 100 degrees outside where you're at. But yet, here you are wearing a turtleneck, making it seem like you're so motherly. The whole time, she was just making up lies every single day. Like, every day, this girl was making up lies. So I'm just looking at her interviews, and I'm just like, she's so full of shit. Like, I was talking to my coworker about it, and yeah, we already knew that the baby was deceased, because there's no way that you're not going to report your kid dead for months, you know, like it makes no sense. So she thought she was going to be another Casey Anthony. She thought her ass is locked up. She ain't smirking no more in that mugshot. She real life crying now. So I hope them other women's out there and that are locked up with her eat her alive. Literally. I mean, hey, that got dark. That got real dark. So, yeah, so I'm done. I'm gonna just stop it, cut it out here. Next week, I'm going to have like a little fun thing at the end too. I haven't done any yet, but because I'm trying to like get the hang of it and like see how everything flows. So next week is going to be the fun 15 minute thing that I'm going to be doing, which I have everything written down. So, but yeah, I'm ending it. That was a good 30 minutes of your life. Tell a friend, tell your partner, tell your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband, your fiance, your mistress, whatever. Like, whoever you want to tell, tell them to listen to Crime Marita. If they like margaritas, hey, tell them to listen. And yeah, oh, if you're listening to me to Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, leave a review, whatever makes you happy, whatever makes me happy, please just do me that favor, do me that solid. Yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and whisper in your ear a little goodbye. I'm getting watched, but goodbye, my true crime lovers. I'll talk to you guys on Monday, 12 o'clock. And I am out of here.